Chapter 36. Daughter of the Night. Realizing that he had no way of knowing which cabin was supposed to be his, he put his head into several. They were dark, and all of them had two men asleep in the narrow beds built against each side, all but one, which held Loyal, sitting on the floor, between the beds, and barely fitting, scribbling in his cloth-bound book of notes by the light of a gimbaled lantern. The Ogier wanted to talk about the events of the day, but Perrin, jaws creaking with the effort of holding his yawns in, thought the ship must have run far enough downriver by now to make it safe to sleep. Safe to dream. Even if they tried, wolves could not long keep pace with the sweeps and the current. Finally, he found a windowless cabin with no one in it at all, which suited him just as well. He wanted to be alone. A coincidence in the name, that's all, he thought, as he lit the lantern mounted on the wall. Anyway, her real name is Zareen. But the girl with the high cheekbones and dark, tilted eyes was not uppermost in his thoughts. He put his bow and other belongings on one cramped bed, tossed his cloak over them, and sat on the other to tug off his boots. Elias Machira had found a way to live with what he was, a man somehow linked with wolves, and he had not gone mad. Thinking back, Perrin was sure Elias had been living that way for years before he ever met the man. He wants to be that way. He accepts it anyway. That was no solution. Perrin did not want to live that way, did not want to accept it. But if you have the bar stock to make a knife, you accept it and make a knife. Even if you'd like a wood axe. No, my life is more than iron to be hammered into shape. Cautiously, he reached out with his mind, feeling for wolves, and found nothing. Oh, there was a dim impression of wolves somewhere in the distance, but it faded even as he touched it. For the first time in so long, he was alone. Blessedly alone. Blowing out the lantern, he lay down for the first time in days. How in the light will Loyal manage in one of these? Those all but sleepless nights rolled over him, exhaustion slacking his muscles. It came to him that he had managed to put the Aiel out of his head. And the white cloaks. Light forsaken axe. Burn me, I wish I had never seen it, was his last thought before sleep. Thick gray fog surrounded him, dense enough low down that he could not see his own boots, and so heavy on every side that he could not make out anything 10 paces away. There was surely nothing nearer. Anything at all might lie within it. The mist did not feel right. There was no dampness to it. He put a hand to his belt, seeking the comfort of knowing he could defend himself, and gave a start. His axe was not there. Something moved in the fog, a swirling in the grayness. Something coming his way. He tensed, wondering if it was better to run or stand and fight with his bare hands, wondering if there was anything to fight. The billowing furrow boring through the fog resolved itself into a wolf, a shaggy form almost one with the heavy mist. Hopper? The wolf hesitated, then came to stand beside him. It was Hopper, he was certain, but something about the wolf's stance, something in the yellow eyes that looked up briefly to meet his, demanded silence, in mind as well as body. Those eyes demanded that he follow, too. He laid a hand on the wolf's back, and as he did, Hopper started forward. He let himself be led. The fur under his hand was thick and shaggy. It felt real. The fog began to thicken until only his hand told him Hopper was still there, until a glance down did not even show him his own chest. Just gray mist. He might as well have been wrapped in new sheared wool for all he could see. It struck him that he had heard nothing either, not even the sound of his own footsteps. He wiggled his toes and was relieved to feel the boots on his feet. The gray became darker, and he and the wolf walked through pitch blackness. He could not see his hand when he touched his nose. He could not see his nose, for that matter. He tried closing his eyes for a moment and could not tell any difference. There was still no sound. His hand felt the rough hair of Hopper's back, but he was not sure he could feel anything under his boots. Suddenly, Hopper stopped, forcing him to halt too. He looked around and snapped his eyes shut. He could tell a difference now. And feel something, too. A queasy twisting of his stomach. He made himself open his eyes and look down. What he saw could not have been there, not unless he and Hopper were standing in midair. He could see nothing of the wolf or himself, as if neither had bodies at all. That thought nearly tied his stomach into knots. But below him, as clear as if lit by a thousand lamps, stretched a vast array of mirrors, seemingly hanging in blackness, though as level as if they stood on a vast floor. They stretched as far as he could see in every direction, but right beneath his feet there was a clear space, and people in it. Suddenly he could hear their voices as well as if he had been standing among them.
"Great Lord," one of the men muttered. "Where is this place?"
He looked around once, flinching at his image cast back at him many thousandfold, and held his eyes forward after that. The others huddled around him, seemed even more afraid.
"I was asleep in Tarvalen, Great Lord. I am asleep in Tarvalen. Where is this place? Have I gone mad?"
Some of the men around him wore ornate coats full of embroidery, others plainer garb, while some seemed to be naked or in their small clothes.
"I too sleep," a naked man nearly screamed, "in Tyr. I remember lying down with my wife." "And I do sleep in Ilion," a man in red and gold said, sounding shaken. "I know that I do sleep, but that cannot be. I know that I do dream, but that does be impossible. Where does this be, Great Lord? Are you really come to me?"
The dark-haired man who faced them was garbed in black, with silver lace at his throat and wrists. Now and again he put a hand to his chest as if it hurt him. There was light everywhere down there, coming from nowhere, but this man below Perrin seemed cloaked in shadow. Darkness rolled around him, caressed him.
"Silence!"
The black-cloaked man did not speak loudly, but he had no need to. For the space of that word he had raised his head. His eyes and mouth were holes boring into a raging forge fire, all flame and fiery glow. Perrin knew him then. Baal Zemon. He was staring down at Baal Zemon himself. Fear struck through him like hammered spikes. He would have run, but he could not feel his feet. Hopper shifted. He felt the thick fur under his hand and gripped it hard. Something real. Something more really hoped than what he saw. But he knew that both were real. The men huddling together cowered.
"You have been given tasks," Baal Zemon said. "Some of these tasks you have carried out. At others, you have failed."
Now and again his eyes and mouth vanished in flame again, and the mirrors flashed with reflected fire.
"Those who have been marked for death must die. Those who have been marked for taking must bow to me. To fail the great Lord of the Dark cannot be forgiven."
Fire shone through his eyes, and the darkness around him roiled and spun.
"You!"
His finger pointed out the man who had spoken of Tarvalen, a fellow dressed like a merchant in plainly cut clothes of the finest cloth. The others shied away from him, as if he had black bile fever, leaving him to cower alone.
"You allowed the boy to escape Tarvalen!"
The man screamed and began to quiver like a file struck against an anvil. He seemed to become less solid, and his scream thinned with him.
"You all dream," Baal Zemon said. "But what happens in this dream is real."
The shrieking man was only a bundle of mist shaped like a man, his scream far distant, and then even the mist was gone.
"I fear he will never wake."
He laughed, and his mouth roared flame.
"The rest of you will not fail me again. Begone. Wake and obey."
The other men vanished. For a moment, Baal Zemon stood alone. Then suddenly there was a woman with him, clad all in white and silver. Shock hit Perrin. He could never forget a woman so beautiful. She was the woman from his dream, the one who had urged him to glory. An ornate silver throne appeared behind her, and she sat, carefully arranging her silken skirts.
"You make free use of my domain," she said.
"Your domain," Balzamon said. "You claim it yours, then? Do you no longer serve the great lord of the dark?"
The darkness around him thickened for an instant, seemed to boil.
"I serve," she said quickly. "I have served the Lord of the Twilight long. Long did I lie imprisoned for my service in an endless, dreamless sleep. Only Grey Men and Myrdral are denied dreams. Even Trollocs can dream. Dreams were always mine, to use and walk. Now I am free again, and I will use what is mine."
"What is yours?" Balzamon said.
The blackness swirling round him seemed mirthful.
"You always thought yourself greater than you were, Lanfear."
The name cut at Perrin like a newly honed knife. One of the Forsaken had been in his dreams. Moraine had been right. Some of them were free. The woman in white was on her feet, the throne gone.
"I am as great as I am. What have your plans come to? 3,000 years and more of whispering in ears and pulling the strings of throned puppets like an Aes Sedai."
Her voice invested the name with all scorn.
3,000 years, and yet Luz Theron walks the world again, and these Aes Sedai all but have him leashed. Can you control him? Can you turn him? He was mine before ever that straw-haired chit Ilyena saw him. He will be mine again. Do you serve yourself now, Lanfear?"
Balzamon's voice was soft, but flame raged continuously in his red eyes and mouth.
"Have you abandoned your oaths to the great lord of the dark?"
For an instant, the darkness nearly obliterated him, only the glowing fires showing through.
"They are not so easily broken as the oaths to the light you forsook, proclaiming your new master in the very hall of the servants. Your master claims you forever, Lanfear. Will you serve, or do you choose an eternity of pain, of endless dying without release?"
"I serve."
Despite her words, she stood tall and defiant.
"I serve the great lord of the dark and none other. Forever."
The vast array of mirror began to vanish, as if black waves rolled in over it, ever closer to the center. The tide rolled over Baalzamon and Lanfear. There was only blackness. Perrin felt Hopper move, and he was more than glad to follow, guided only by the feel of fur under his hand. It was not until he was moving that he realized he could. He tried to puzzle out what he had seen without any success. Balzamon and Lanfear. His tongue stuck to the roof of his mouth. For some reason, Lanfear frightened him more than Balzamon did. Perhaps because she had been in his dreams in the mountains.
Light, one of the Forsaken in my dreams. Light.
And unless he had missed something, she had defied the Dark One. He had been told and taught that the shadow could have no power over you if you denied it. But how could a dark friend, not just a dark friend, one of the Forsaken, defy the shadow?
I must be mad, like Simeon's brother.
These dreams have driven me mad. Slowly the blackness became fog again, and the fog gradually thinned until he walked out of it with Hopper onto a grassy hillside bright with daylight. Birds began to sing from a thicket at the foot of the hill. He looked back. A hilly plain dotted with clumps of trees stretched to the horizon. There was no sign of fog anywhere. The big grizzled wolf stood watching him.
"What was that?" he demanded, struggling in his mind to turn the question to thoughts the wolf could understand. "Why did you show it to me? What was it?"
Emotions and images flooded his thoughts, and his mind put words to them.
"What you must see. Be careful, young bull. This place is dangerous. Be wary as a cub hunting porcupine."
That came as something closer to small thornyback, but his mind named the animal the way he knew it as a man.
You are too young, too new.
Was it real?
All is real, what is seen and what is not seen.
That seemed to be all the answer Hopper was going to give.
Hopper, how are you here? I saw you die. I felt you die. All are here. All brothers and sisters that are, all that were, all that will be.
Perrin knew that wolves did not smile, not the way humans did, but for an instant he had the impression that Hopper was grinning.
Here I soar like the eagle.
The wolf gathered himself and leaped up into the air. Up and up it carried him until he dwindled to a speck in the sky, and a last thought came.
To soar.
Perrin stared after him with his mouth hanging open.
He did it.
His eyes burned suddenly, and he cleared his throat and scrubbed at his nose.
I will be crying like a girl next.
Without thinking, he looked around to see if anyone had seen him, and that quickly everything changed. He was standing on a rise with shadowy indistinct dips and swells all around him. They seemed to fade into the distance too soon. Rand stood below him. Rand in a ragged circle of Myrdral and men and women, his eyes seemed to slide right past. Dogs howled somewhere in the distance, and Perrin knew they were hunting something. Myrdral scent and the stink of burned sulfur filled the air. Perrin's hackles rose. The circle of Myrdral and people came closer to Rand, all walking as if asleep, and Rand began to kill them. Balls of fire flew from his hands and consumed two. Lightning flashed from above to shrivel others. Bars of light like white-hot steel flew from his fists to more. And the survivors continued to walk slowly closer, as if none of them saw what was happening. One by one they died until none were left, and Rand sank down on his knees, panting. Perrin was not sure whether he was laughing or crying. It seemed to be some of each. Shapes appeared over the rises, more people coming, more Myrdral, all intent on Rand. Perrin cupped his hands to his mouth.
Rand! Rand! There are more coming!
Rand looked up at him from his crouch, snarling, sweat slicking his face.
Rand! There! Burn you!
Rand howled. Light burned Perrin's eyes, and pain seared everything. Groaning, he rolled into a ball on the narrow bed, the light still burning behind his eyelids. His chest hurt. He raised a hand to it and winced when he felt a burn under his shirt, a spot no bigger than a silver penny. Bit by bit, he forced his knotted muscles to let him straighten his legs and lie flat in the dark cabin.
Moraine. I have to tell Moraine this time. Just have to wait till the pain goes away.
But as the pain began to fade, exhaustion took him. He barely had a thought that he must get up before sleep pulled him down again. When he opened his eyes again, he lay staring at the beams overhead. Light at the top and bottom of the door told him morning had come. He put a hand to his chest to convince himself he had imagined it. Imagined it so well that he had actually felt a burn. His fingers found the burn.
I didn't imagine it then.
He had dim memories of a few other dreams, fading even as he recalled them. Ordinary dreams. He even felt as if he had had a good night's sleep, and could use another one right now. But it meant he could sleep.
As long as there are no wolves around, anyway.
He remembered making a decision in that brief waking after the dream with Hopper, and after a moment he decided it had been a good one. It took knocking on 5 doors and being cursed at twice, the inhabitants of 2 cabins had gone on deck, before he found Moraine. She was fully dressed, sitting on one of the narrow beds, cross-legged, reading in her book of notes by lantern light. Back near the beginning, he saw, notes that must have been made even before she had come to Emmons Field. Lan's things were neatly placed on the other bed.
I had a dream, he told her,
and proceeded to tell her of it. All of it. He even pulled up his shirt to show her the small circle on his chest, red, with wavy lines radiating from it. He had kept things from her before, and he suspected he would again, but this might be too important to hold back. The pin was the smallest part of a pair of scissors, and the easiest made, but without it, the scissors cut no cloth. When he was done, he stood there waiting. She had watched him without expression, except that those dark eyes had examined every word as it came out of his mouth, weighed it, measured it, held it up to the light. Now she sat the same way, only it was he who was examined, weighed, and held up to the light. "Well, is it important?" he demanded finally. "I think it was one of those wolf dreams you told me about. I'm sure it was. It must have been. But that doesn't make what I saw real. Only you said maybe some of the Forsaken are free, and he called her Lanfear and... Is it important, or am I standing here making a fool out of myself?"
"There are women," she said slowly, "who would do their best to gentle you if they heard what I just did."
His lungs seemed to freeze. He could not breathe.
"I am not accusing you of being able to channel," she went on, and the ice inside him melted. "Or even of being able to learn. An attempted gentling would not harm you, beyond the rough treatment the Red Aja would give you before they realize their error. Such men are so rare, even the Reds, with all their hunting, have not found more than 3 in the last 10 years. Before the outbreak of false dragons, at least. What I am trying to make clear to you is that I do not think you will suddenly begin wielding the power. You do not have to be afraid of that."
"Well, thank you very much for that," he said bitterly. "You do not have to scare me to death, just so you can tell me there was no need to be frightened."
"Oh, you do have reason to be frightened, or at least careful, as the wolf suggested. Red sisters or others might kill you before they discovered there was nothing to gentle in you."
Light, burn me!" He stared at her with a frown. "You're trying to lead me around by the nose, Moraine, but I am no calf, and there's no ring in my nose. The Red Aja or any other would not think of gentling unless there was something real in what I dreamed. Does it mean the Forsaken are loose?"
"I told you before that they might be, some of them. Your dreams are nothing I expected, Perrin. Dreamers have written of wolves, but I did not expect this."
"Well, I think it was real. I think I saw something that really happened, something I wasn't supposed to see."
"What you must see."
"I think Lanfear is loose at the very least. What are you going to do?"
"I am going to Ilion, and then I will go to Tyr and hope to reach it before Rand. We had need to leave Remen too quickly for Lan to learn whether he crossed the river or went down it. We should know before we reach Ilion, though. We will find sign if he has gone this way." She glanced at her book as if she wanted to resume her reading.
"Is that all you are going to do? With Lanfear loose, and the light alone knows how many of the others?"
"Do not question me," she said coldly. "You do not know which questions to ask, and you would comprehend less than half the answers if I gave them, which I will not."
He shifted his feet under her gaze until it became clear she would say no more on the matter. His shirt rubbed painfully at the burn on his chest. It did not seem a bad hurt, not for being struck by lightning, it doesn't. But how he had come by it was another matter.
Will you heal this? Are you no longer uneasy about the one power being used on you then, Perrin? No, I will not heal it. It is not serious, and it will remind you of the need to be careful."
Careful about pressing her, he knew, as well as about dreams or letting others know of them.
"If there is nothing else, Perrin?"
He started for the door, then stopped.
"There is one thing. If you knew a woman's name was Zareen, would you think it meant anything about her?" "Why under the light do you ask this question?"
"A girl," he said awkwardly. "A young woman. I met her last night. She's one of the other passengers." He would let her discover for herself that Zareen knew she was Aes Sedai, and seemed to think following them would lead her to the Horn of Valyr.
He would not keep back anything he thought was important, but if Moraine could be secretive, so could he. Zorin. It is a Saldaean name. No woman would name her daughter that unless she expected her to be a great beauty. And a heartbreaker. One to lie on cushions in palaces, surrounded by servants and suitors. She smiled, briefly, but with great amusement. Perhaps you have another reason to be careful, Perrin, if there is a Zorin as a passenger with us.
I intend to be careful, he told her. At least he knew why Zorin did not like her name. Hardly fitting for a hunter of the horn.
As long as she doesn't call herself Falcon.
When he went on deck, Lan was there, looking over Mondarb, and Zorin was sitting on a coil of rope near the railing, sharpening one of her knives and watching him. The big triangular sails were set and taut, and the snow goose flew downriver. Zareen's eyes followed Perrin as he walked by her to stand in the bow. The water curled to either side of the prow, like earth turning around a good plow. He wondered about dreams and Aielman, men's viewings and falcons. His chest hurt. Life had never been as tangled as this. Rand sat up out of his exhausted sleep, gasping, the cloak he had used as a blanket falling away. His side ached, the old wound from Falma throbbing. His fire had burned down to coals with only a few wavering flames, but it was still enough to make the shadows move.
That was Perrin. It was. It was him, not a dream. Somehow. I almost killed him. Light, I have to be careful.
Shivering, he picked up a length of oak branch and started to shove it into the coals. The trees were scattered in these Mirandian hills, still close to the Manetheran Drell, but he had found just enough fallen branches for his fire, the wood just old enough to be properly cured but not rotten. Before the wood touched the coals, he stopped. There were horses coming, 10 or 12 of them walking slowly.
I have to be careful. I cannot make another mistake.
The horses swung toward his failing fire, entered the dim light, and stopped. The shadows obscured their riders, but most seemed to be rough-faced men, wearing round helmets and long leather jerkins, sewn all over with metal discs like fish scales. One was a woman with graying hair and a no-nonsense look on her face. Her dark dress was plain wool, but the finest weave, and adorned with a silver pin in the shape of a lion. A merchant, she seemed to him. He had seen her sort among those who came to buy tobacco and wool in the two rivers. A merchant and her guards.
I have to be careful, he thought as he stood. No mistakes.
You have chosen a good campsite, young man, she said. I have often used it on my way to Remen. There is a small spring nearby. I trust you have no objection to my sharing it.
Her guards were already dismounting, hitching at their sword belts and loosening saddle girths.
None, Rand told her.
Careful.
2 steps brought him close enough, and he leaped into the air, spinning.
Thistledown floats on the whirlwind.
Heronmark blade carved from fire, coming into his hands to take her head off before surprise could even form on her face.
She was the most dangerous.
He alighted as the woman's head rolled from the crupper of her horse. The guards yelled and clawed for their swords, screamed as they realized his blade burned. He danced among them in the forms Lan had taught him, and knew he could have killed all 10 with ordinary steel, but the blade he wielded was part of him. The last man fell, and it had been so like practicing the forms that he had already begun the sheathing called folding the fan, before he remembered he wore no scabbard, and this blade would have turned it to ash at a touch if he had. Letting the sword vanish, he turned to examine the horses. Most had run away, but some not far, and the woman's tall gelding stood with rolling eyes, wickering uneasily. Her headless corpse, lying on the ground, had maintained its grip on the reins and held the animal's head down. Rand pulled them free, pausing only to gather his few belongings before swinging into the saddle.
I have to be careful, he thought as he looked over the dead. No mistakes.
The power still filled him, the flow from Sidene sweeter than honey, ranker than rotted meat. Abruptly, he channeled,
not really understanding what it was he did or how, only that it seemed right, and it worked, lifting the corpses. He set them in a line facing him, kneeling, faces in the dirt. For those who had faces left. Kneeling to him. "If I am the dragon reborn," he told them, "that is the way it is supposed to be, isn't it?" Letting go of Sidine was hard, but he did it. "If I hold it too much, how will I keep the madness away?" He laughed bitterly. "Or is it too late for that?" Frowning, he peered at the line. He had been sure there were only 10 men, but 11 men knelt in that line, one of them without armor of any sort, but with a dagger still gripped in his hand. "You chose the wrong company," Rand told that man. Wheeling the gelding, he dug in his heels and set the animal to a dead gallop into the night. It was a long way to Tyr yet, but he meant to get there by the straightest way if he had to kill horses or steal them. "I will put an end to it. The taunting, the baiting. I will end it, Kalandor." It called to him.